Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Corey Foy, joined today by Ryan Foley, the head coach of the Boston University Terriers. Wow. We are talking about, you know, really the way that I would frame this conversation is, so a national conversation erupted in early June around racial justice in the United States, racial justice globally. You know, certainly in the wake of the video of George Floyd's death and a number of other high profile instances of racism and injustice, police brutality, etc. It's a very, very nuanced and complicated conversation. In many respects, there are some respects in which it's also very simplistic. But we've talked a lot about it, both in, you know, kind of society at large and in inside lacrosse. And certainly on this podcast, there's probably been, you know, six or seven podcasts over the last 2.5 months that have been about this topic. But one of the things that's a really interesting and important component of this is the role that it plays in teams. And certainly the responsibility that the leader of a team has within the team organization, within the organization of the athletic department on a college or university campus, and certainly on the campus wide component of it as well. And you're a good person to talk with us about, because I was really struck in mid-June. I think it was June 19th, but it might have been June 18th. You gave me a call, and I don't know why, and I want you to answer that question. I would assume it was because we produced a lot of content around this topic. And, you know, I personally have kind of spoken at length about it and in different forums over multiple years. And, you know, but those are all just my assumptions. But you reached out, and basically, you know, one of the enduring memories was, you know, you were pretty candid. You said, I'm nervous. You know, I'm a little uncomfortable. I don't know how to proceed with this. Now, this in the, I guess, kind of immediate moment was a department-wide conversation, right? Where every athlete at BU was invited to a digital conference where this topic was going to be discussed. Do you mind just relating, you know, thinking back 2 months ago and sharing what your thoughts were as you realized that this was an experience that your team was about to begin in earnest, and then describing the circumstances around this department-wide conversation that got the ball rolling?
Sure. And I think you articulated it really well, Terry. And for people that obviously don't know Terry and I's relationship, you know, it's based on lacrosse, but it's very rarely talking about X's and O's. We got to know each other through Boston University starting its program, and Terry has been a leader in kind of writing about programs starting up and the finances behind it. And something that really interests me, and I love to talk Terry about it. So it's almost these lifestyle conversations and these conversations that aren't X's and O's. And I just reached out to Terry and I said, listen, I am struggling with this. And it's not struggling in the fact that I'm afraid to talk about it, but at the time I was afraid to say the wrong thing. And I wanted, this was such an important topic nationwide, and it was such an important topic to my players. And I got to feel that very early in this conversation that I didn't want to misstep. And I, you know, I talked to some of my Black friends, and, you know, they gave me their perspective, and I wanted to just, I know Inside Lacrosse has been at the forefront of this topic, and I just wanted to reach out to a neutral party and just say, here's how I feel. And, you know, personally, I've listened, I've learned, and I'm coming to grips with, this is not something to fear. And this is not something, even though I'm still, frankly, a little uncomfortable, nervous to be on this call, this is something that I need to work on personally and say that message. This is not something to be afraid of. This is a topic, this is an important topic, and this topic needs to be talked about. And if I make a mistake, and if I make a mistake on this call, or if I make a mistake with my team, that's okay. One of the first things we did was have Keith Wolford do a Zoom call with our team. And Keith has been working with our team for 4 years. And for those who don't know Keith, he's I wouldn't even call him a motivational speaker, but he's more of a life coach with a lacrosse background. And he's tremendous. And, you know, one thing that resonated with that call is don't be afraid to speak up, and don't be afraid to make a mistake in what you say. The Black community is not expecting the white community and white individuals would be perfect in what you say. Educate yourself, think about it, speak, and you know, try to do your part in this really huge problem that's been going on for a really long time, and understand that individuals aren't going to solve this overnight, but we certainly have a role in this, and we can make small changes that can help this overall problem.
So why do you think Boston University Athletics felt the need to have a department-wide call?
I think led by our athletic director, who's very progressive thinking and very forward thinking, recognizes this is a huge issue. And this is an issue that is important to our student athletes. And it's important from a department wide. It was important to give the students a platform to speak. It was important to talk about what our position was going to be. I believe the majority of the programs put out a statement on Twitter. I know we did. And those statements were really important to myself and my staff and our players. I mean, we literally spent over a day, and when I say we were, and this comes back to the carefulness over saying the right thing, but we just, it was important to us and it was important to them. And I think the athletic department understood that. And, you know, you can look at our statement on Twitter, but the most important thing to me, and I'll like, once we got this on paper, it felt so good, was to say our program has not done enough. We haven't done, me personally as the head coach, certainly, you know, the assistants, who are young and impressionable and are phenomenal assistants, and our players, to just get that on paper. We haven't done enough, and we're going to do more. And to come up with a plan, and then we sat down and it kind of, doing this in connection with doing this statement is to have a plan, and became very obvious. Myself, number one biggest culprit of this, I wasn't educated enough on the topic. You know, I really needed to take the time, talk to people, educate myself, because it's important. This is a huge topic that, you know, I had a conversation with our women's basketball coach, who's black, and it's just like white people are so comfortable living in their lane, and it like just the light bulb went off in my head. She's 100% right. Like, I am super comfortable in my life. I've kind of grown up and had this, you know, blessed life. My parents worked really hard, and you know, I haven't really had a want for anything, and I just live in my lane. And for her to say, listen, it's really easy for you to do, but there's a lot happening in the other lanes that isn't right. And, you know, do me a favor and take a peek over there. And, you know, that resonated with me. And now I'm trying to look at the other lanes and see, use my influence and my platform and my team's platform, frankly, to try to make some meaningful changes.
So we'll get to your team's platform in a second, because that is where the meat of this conversation is. But there was one thing that you said to me that has really stuck with me. And it's basically that on most college campuses, the athletic department is more diverse than the general student population. But on most college and most athletic departments that have lacrosse teams, specifically men's lacrosse teams, the men's lacrosse team can be seen by some of their athletic department colleagues, peers, as just kind of a manifestation of white privilege, because the roster tends to be so homogeneously white. And I've just been thinking about that so substantially, because to me it tweaked my thinking around the racial history of the sport. So much about this national dialogue has been refocused and framed around the lacrosse community specifically. And, you know, there's a lot of different facets of the conversation about race and lacrosse. But one of them is, you know, 90, 88 to 92% depending on what division you're talking about, of the players are white. And that yields a just type of in roster dynamic and in department dynamic that is really important. And so I would imagine that hearing and seeing your players take it seriously has been welcomed within the department. Is that so?
Yeah, I want to talk to 2 points because you said a lot there. And just to kind of extrapolate out, 100% people were looking within the department, whether it was coaches or student athletes, were looking at men's lacrosse and what are you going to do? And what is your position on this? Are you going to take this serious? Do we have an ally in you in this, you know, in this journey? And will you stand with us because of what you just said? You know, we're 50 guys, majority of white, have been majority white since I've been here, mostly from affluent backgrounds that, as I described early, live in their lane. So specifically, the question was posed, I mentioned Marissa and I love her. The question was posed to me, are your guys going to be on this call? And I said, absolutely. This is important. And I didn't need to make it mandatory. And the guys, again, this is really important to them. This is something that they understand is an issue, and certainly want to just do our part on campus. You know, BU is, you know, we're an international university, but you know, there aren't, you know, from a diversity standpoint, there aren't a ton of black kids on campus. So do our part to make sure everybody from the black community feels welcomed and knows they have a partner in the lacrosse team. But you know, your initial question, you know, I think everybody just understood how important this was and that people were looking at us and we wanted to do the right thing. At the end of the day, this comes down to being a good person. This totally comes down to, you know, we can talk white, black, whatever, be a good person and understand that through the history of time and in your, you know, how you're brought up and the prejudice that you develop, whether it's, you know, from your parents or whether it's from your high school or your education or just wherever it comes from. At the end of the day, if we just kind of block all that out and just be nice to every single person and be inclusive, but also understand the history of this and understand that there's a sensitivity, a heightened sensitivity to this, where you might take someone not inviting you into the party as just, hey, maybe the party's full and, you know, I'm going to move on to the next party. Someone who's been told they can't come to that party their entire life, even the party might be full, but there's a little bit of a sensitivity. Well, am I not being allowed to go to this party because I'm black, or is the party really full? So just kind of those small, and we talked about, you know, microaggressions and that word that resonated with guys, just like these small things that were happening on campus. And that's what we're talking about. You know, the real change, these little things. Now there's huge changes that need to be made. And, you know, certainly not at the, you know, when we talk about policy and things like that, and my guys get that, but there's these small little changes that we talked about that you can do within your everyday life and on community that's going to make a world of difference and show that you're taking this really seriously.
So you decided to read a book as a team and then talk about it every week in two groups, right?
Yes. So we came up with this kind of a plan. We started, the first part was, you know, and I said this to the team as we were going through this process, the first thing, and you know, I use myself as an example, we are not educated on this. We are trying to, you know, we're being looked at to make a decision and say things and act a certain way. And we don't really know anything about this. A lot of us, the majority of us. So let's make a plan. So the plan was to educate, discuss, and then come up with a plan and then execute. So those are kind of the four steps that we really thought about. And the first step, with BU at the same time, you know, BU hired, you know, one of the premier speakers on this and one of the experts on this, Iram Kendi, to be a professor at the U and run our social justice department. And he was coming to BU, and I knew, you know, as I did research, there was probably five or six books that I narrowed it down to. It just made the most sense to this guy, you know, this professor was going to be on campus to read a book called, you know, How to Be an Anti-Racist, excuse me. And it fell in line because we were having those discussions, and it was part of our statement. You know, not only do we have to condemn racism, but we need to be anti-racist. And there's a big difference between that and it's talking, that's living outside of your lane and going, doing the other step, not even like worrying about yourself being, you know, condemning racism is like one thing and living your life where you're not a racist. But then the next step is just going all out and just making sure there's no place for this in your life. So we decided to read the book. We did about three or four chapters, a clip. We split up in two groups. My assistants took one group and I took the other group, and it was incredible. It was an incredible experience. And it was all like this, Curry, where it was conversation. It was, I'm sure you're prepared and you have questions, but it just flowed. Guys were amazed at some of the things that they were reading. The thought provoking was at another level, and you know, I couldn't be more proud of my guys for you know, how serious they took it, how prepared they were, and certainly the thoughts and you know, the topics that we dove into.
So you invited me to sit in on one of the sessions. And either I wasn't available or other circumstances prevailed, in addition to which I hadn't read the book. So this past week, you hit me up and said, our last session is today because school's about to start and we're talking about Boys in the Hood. And it just so happens that I love that movie. And I had an incredible emotional reaction the first time I saw it that I felt like, I'm really interested in how guys that are 15 to 18 years younger than me reacted to this movie now in this moment versus when I first saw it in, say, 2001, something like that. And so I got an opportunity to sit in on the call, and it was really eye-opening, I think for a variety of reasons. But the thing that was most meaningful to me is that when you get a group setting, right, and obviously a lacrosse team is going to be way more close-knit than a typical classroom in terms of the fact that you guys have a lot of continuity, you spend a lot of time together, there's a lot of trust that's been built. But oftentimes, you know, that has an inverse effect, meaning that, like, so you can imagine a scenario in which people feel more comfortable saying something, but on the other hand, they might feel less comfortable because the stakes are higher, right? If you're surrounded by people you don't really know that well or don't care that much about, then you're not going to be that nervous about saying the wrong thing. I was really impressed by, now, there were a couple of guys who you had to draw out, right? And that's going to be the case in any setting where there's, you know, a hierarchy of 20 to 25 people. But everybody had something to say. That was the kind of primary takeaway, was each time someone either volunteered, spoke up, or was asked to share their thought on a particular item, there was substance. And so, you know, it just demonstrated that there was kind of on an individual level a seriousness to the way in which they were reacting. And so, you know, specifically about the movie, for those listeners that might not know, it was in early 90s, you know, I'm blanking on the director's name. Singleton, kind of drama set in South Central LA, a part of a, you know, kind of group of movies that pushed that genre to a new level. Certainly emerged around the same time as that California rap scene, and is iconic in so many different ways and in so many different respects. And I shared after your team was finished with their points that when I saw it, even though it is fictional and the events depicted did not really happen. I had, like, when one of the main characters is the victim of violence, I had a really strong physical reaction. I was eating a bowl of cereal, and it was late at night, and I, like, stopped. I, like, couldn't eat anymore, completely lost my appetite. And it was something that was pretty rare. I had never really experienced that before. And my point was that was a part of, like, my arc to understanding this issue, and it was because it was, like, an intense reaction that it affected me so deeply that, you know, it was on a very individualized basis. That's just a part of my outlook. It's a part of forming the way that I approach this topic, and that just opening yourself up to reading a book or watching a movie that you wouldn't otherwise have read or watched, and then having those reactions goes so far in terms of informing your perspective and your worldview. And you know, obviously for some people it opens doors and you pursue more media like that, and you learn more about the real elements of life that are affected by that, et cetera, et cetera. So just, you know, we're going to talk to one of your players and hear a little bit more about his experience with this, but how do you characterize or summarize the entire group's just the way in which they processed encountering something that, you know, 4 months ago when their season was canceled, they probably didn't imagine they were going to spend their summer reading, watching, and talking to their teammates about.
So to kind of piggyback off what you said about the movie, the two overlying themes were, and this goes right in line with your question, it's just eye-opening. Guys were like, I had no idea. Like, and you hear, you know, about bad situations, and you hear about, you know, poverty-stricken areas, and you hear about people living in less than ideal conditions, but just there, I had no idea. But this is how people live, and this is how people treat the Black community, and this is, you know, things that are going on the world, in their world. So that was the first thing. And then the second thing, one of my players said, and I was thinking about this, the problem that we are discussing, you know, the week-to-week discussions that were on the book were highlighted in this movie very clearly 30 years ago.
Right.
So, you know, he talked about racism among, you know, one of the topics in the book was Black-on-Black racism. And there was a example of a police officer being very racist towards, you know, the two, you know, Cuba Gooding Jr. When he gets pulled over. And then the scene where it's talking about redlining and buying the property at a lower property at a lower cost and then building it up and trying to move all the Black people out, like that all that stuff was highlighted in the book. So my guys are like, wow, this was 30 years ago, and this was you know, in a, you know, the movie obviously is entertaining, it's sad, but it has a it's very well done, and we're seeing it on the screen, and then we're reading almost this educational book. And they're talking about the same things. So that really stood out. So, but the overall process, I mean, I think the guys, one thing was, we just didn't learn about this. And we're learning about some of these things for the first time. And one kid said about it, why not do it here? Why not learn about it with our buddies, with our best friends? And have these open discussions. And one person said, I just really appreciate that we've made this a priority and that we can have these open discussions. We can talk freely. We can say what we feel. And there were some guys that, you know, said some things that, you know, were not hard to hear, but they were in what we were talking about were different viewpoints. And that's okay. And that's really one of the stronger things that came out is question your new, not your news sources, but not question your education, but like there's another side to this. And just because you learned about it in fourth grade doesn't mean you're getting the full story. And be educated and read as much. If this is a topic of interest to you, read as much as you can, because there's so many different sides of it. And there's definitely, and don't just regurgitate what you hear, there's another side of this. Educate yourself. So So I think a lot of guys took from that there's a lot to learn on this topic. And, you know, like you said, Terry, I think people were kind of craving more because they understand this to be an important topic and they would like to know more about it.
Let's talk to one of your players. He's a rising junior midfielder,
yep.
Ben Girolamo from Pelham, New York, and hear about what it was like to go through this experience. What was your reaction when the coaching staff and the athletic department said, like, hey, this is a program that we're going to undertake. We're going to try to do this together. We're going to have these conversations as a group.
Yeah, so, I mean, initially, I mean, I was just really proud, I would say, of our program, because I know that a lot of programs and a lot of organizations in general aren't doing the things that we're doing right now. And, yeah, I think it's just great because at first it maybe wasn't striking home for every player on our team, but as we continue to be an anti-racist program and work on ourselves to be anti-racist people, you just see more and more people on our team just kind of giving input and challenging themselves. So, I mean, yeah, initially I was just super excited about the way our program and the coaches are approaching Black Lives Matter and the whole movement that's going on right now. So, yeah.
Hey, Ben, this is Coach Poli. In all of our discussions, you were amazing and just had, I could tell you put a lot of thought into it and you had some great points. What about this movement has really touched you and why you're so passionate about it?
So I would say a couple things I'm the most passionate about that I've kind of realized through all of our discussions and the book and just doing further research. I would say, first of all, things kind of have to be changed through policy, I think. And that was one of Kendi's theses in the book we read, How to Be an Anti-Racist. And throughout the whole book, he's just saying it's the systems, it's systematic, you know. And then to go to the other side of it, our impact as a program, I would say and we discussed this a little bit, I would say, in our last discussion, which was with Coach Filippo and Silberlick, kind of just kindness around campus. And, you know, that's not something that's just like, oh, be nice to people. It's like you kind of have to go out of your way to include other groups of people. Yeah, I guess that's it, really. Just being inclusive and taking action, not just laying back, sitting back, and like letting life go by without approaching the things that you know are sitting in the back of your head. As in, and we talked about this specific example of like a group of Black women walking down the street and a large group of white guys, and they may feel intimidated by our presence. You know, our lacrosse team especially, we travel in a large group of people, and you know our intentions aren't always clear to everyone, so you do have to really go out of your way to show people that you care.
Ben, what's it been like talking to your teammates outside of these structured conversations? Do you notice that, particularly with some of the guys who you referenced might not have either taken it as seriously or understood the gravity or as understood as acutely how important it was, have you found those guys maybe pulling up the lessons that they've learned or the things that they've heard a little bit more in other conversations?
Yeah. I would say definitely. I get a lot of texts, I'd say, from friends or responding to something I posted on Instagram. And it's people who genuinely have good intentions and they see that I've done research and they see that I'm passionate about this, and they kind of just ask questions or give me their input. And I for one, greatly appreciate that, because it's showing that people are actually listening to the words that I say, and things that I say do have an impact on people. And even if two people on our team don't see eye to eye, which is the case in a lot of cases, you know, people always have different views. And so I really appreciate them reaching out to me and saying something that, you know, I may not have taken into account, or, and then giving them, you know, just like honest feedback. And I think the best way to do that is just to, you know, you can't, there can never be anger or resentment in when you're having uncomfortable conversations like that. And like I said before, I think the best way to do it is to just be open-minded and just be kind to one another and try to work to push this movement as far as we can go with it, and, you know, solve injustices that exist today.
So Ben, what do you think the next steps are? You know, we talked about it as a team, but you personally, what are some areas that you, or one area that you're going to concentrate as like the next step for Ben, and then maybe a next step for our program?
Yeah. I'm not someone who I really think I'm ever going to be in politics as my career. But I would say, first of all, I think, like, just getting as many people to vote and just, like, showing that this is a time where, even if you're not into politics, you have to realize that this is a time where your voice really matters. And so that's what I'm trying to get people to do from my point of view, is just encourage people to align their morals and what they want to see in the future with the person that they're voting for in 2020. So that's definitely one thing. And I think in terms of our team on campus, we've talked about this as a team, you know, I mean, first of all, continuing all the things we're doing, I think reading, listening, watching, just continuing to inform ourselves, but then also you have to take action. You know, we were talking about putting ourselves in uncomfortable positions, going down to the Howard Thurman Center on our campus, and just doing things to continue to, improve ourselves and help the Black community. I'd say those are two things that I'm really focused on right now.
I'm interested in one more aspect of this, which is, obviously, you are a high-level lacrosse player and have gone through the funnel of playing lacrosse. And so to the extent that the issues of racism and racial justice manifest themselves uniquely within the sport, what are your thoughts on the perceptions and the realities and the strategies to try to, you know, reduce the perception that it's an exclusive sport and increase the reality that it has a more diverse player population?
Right. Yeah. I think for one, you know, there's plenty of great lacrosse players out there that are Black or other minorities. And I think that all coaches should really be, in this point in time, they should be really trying to go out of their way to find those players, because they are out there, and, you know, not everyone has the ability to attend prospect days like I did, attend these tournaments and pay for all these things. So I think that's definitely one thing that coaches can do. And I think that, you know, players can also encourage people of minorities, Black people, to, you know, pick up a stick and go shoot with them, because it is an amazing sport. I think everyone loves the sport who starts playing and they can't get a stick out of their hands. And just saying, you know, let's go shoot, you know, let's go practice. And I think that's really important as well. So, yeah.
Really well said. Putting your coach on the spot, I love it. Coach Pulley, obviously, this is
seriously
a really unique recruiting environment. But that being said, you know, I think it's a fair and fascinating question. Do you find yourself either implicitly or like subconsciously or consciously, you know, working toward identifying minority prospects that, you know, maybe in a way that is grown over the course of the last couple months or the last year.
Yeah, absolutely, Terry. And just, we've made a commitment as a staff to find enough minority lacrosse players, and so that we, our goal is to commit one every single year, and if more, great. But at a limit, find enough good candidates that fit the you know, profile of a BU student, get them on campus, recruit them, and hopefully matriculate one. I've kind of put myself on notice that exactly what Ben said, just because I got to change my recruiting philosophy to make sure that we're doing everything appropriate, to make sure that we're recruiting enough minority kids. And that includes calling coaches and asking about them, because Ben is 100% right. Not all of them can afford it. And that's exactly what we're talking about. Whether it's racist or whatever, if they can't afford it, we still have to find them.
Well, fellas, I think that's a good place to end. It's a, you know, hopeful message for the future, as well as one that understands the current problems and dynamics that are being faced, and appreciate your time. You know, obviously when you get through like guys talking about race, you're going to miss some things. And I know that there's a lot of room for a lot of these types of conversations. But I really do find that what you guys did this summer to be really compelling, and I'm really fascinated by how it manifests when you guys are back on campus and interacting with that community and you know, trying to continue to advance the role that you guys play within the Boston University environment. So really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast, and look forward to watching you guys on the field.
Thanks, Terry.